I talked about this earlier in the week, but I'll just say it again. Really, the closer you look, I think the more impressed I am with kind of the job that the Ravens have done. Ozzie's been there all the way through, and they lost, a lot of coaches, a lot of personnel people, a lot of players, but they always have a good football team. Steve took over and hired John, and Steve and John and Ozzie just been tremendously consistent over their period of time, winning playoff games every year, playing good football, being consistent, being tough. And they've had a lot of people come and go there too. Again, losing different assistant coaches and coordinators and players, and the Ed Reeds and Ray Lewis's and Ogden's, and just really great players, and still continue to produce and perform at a very high level. So I think those, especially those people there at the top, but obviously all the ones that are part of it, deserve a lot of credit for the consistency and the level of performance that they've been able to sustain there. And we know this is a big challenge for us headed down there Sunday. It's a big game for both teams, and I think we're excited to play, excited for the opportunity and the challenge, and we'll need our best football from everybody, players, coaches, all the starting players, all the role players, all the specialists, all everybody. That's what it'll take down here, I'm sure. So that's what we're gearing up for. That's what we'll try to be. And the Ravens are they're a very good football team. They got a real solid organization, and they're tough. We'll need to be at our best to beat them.
Bill, Ozzie has often talked about your influence on him when you two were with the Browns. When you knew him back then, was there something that stuck out to you that this guy is going to make an excellent personnel evaluator in the NFL?
Yeah, no question. My first year in Cleveland was Ozzie's first year not playing. So he had retired after the 90 season. And, we sat down. Some of the first things I did when I took the jobs, I sat down, talked to Ozzie about his future. He wanted to have a future in the organization, wasn't sure if it was in coaching or, scouting or some other aspect of, public relations or player development or whatever it was. And so he did a number of different things for me there. He coached. He was in the scouting department, similar kind of maybe to what Nick has done here, kind of going a little bit back and forth. I think in the end, probably all those experiences benefited him because he got an appreciation on the scouting end, the player end of it. Of course, he'd been a player, so he had great familiarity what it was like to be a player in the NFL. But scouting players, developing players, being a coach, creating game plans, making personnel decisions from a coach as opposed to as a scout, and all those things. And he did a great job for me, and I learned an awful lot from him. Again, because of his experience as a player and how his playing career, he was a wide receiver in college and he became a tight end. So, there was a lot of development and progression of his career. And then how he, like every player, had a great career, peaked, and then, at the end was at a different point in his career, and how that whole transition worked for him. And he taught me an awful lot about that. And just the whole passing game, receiving, being a receiver, being playing for different quarterbacks, playing in different offensive systems as he did, and so forth. So he was a great resource for me. He taught me an awful lot, and he's been very complimentary about his comments of what he learned from me. But I think I probably learned more from him than he learned from me. He's a very astute, sometimes quiet kind of guy, but the wheels are always turning. He's taking a lot in, and when he speaks, you listen because you respect him, and that he's just not saying things to hear himself talk. He's saying them because he's given a lot of thought, and he's got a very important observation or opinion to share. And he's had a great career. I mean, I can't think of many people that did what he did as a player, and then, in his current position, and all the other things along the way as a scout, as an assistant coach, and so forth. And he's a pretty special person, special, football person too.
How about with Harbaugh? How has your relationship with him kind of progressed over the years?
It'll be a lot better if we don't have to play each other every year, you know. I have a lot of respect for John. John's, you know, another guy that kind of started like I did, you know, started as a special teams coach. And I think that's, as he and I have talked about, I think that's a great way to learn the game of football. You know, you learn situation football, you learn the kicking game, you learn how field position and all those things, you know, relate to the other aspects of the game. And then, you know, if you're an offensive coach, you know defense. If you're a defensive coach, you know offense. I mean, you have to learn those things as part of knowing what's going on the other side of the ball. The kicking game is kind of a, you know, it's kind of its own entity. And, you know, John obviously, again, had a great background, football family. You know, he grew up with it, you know, as I did. And, you know, has really paid his dues. He's been a good coach in this league, whether it was on special teams or defense or, you know, obviously as a head coach. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for John. And, you know, I'd love to have a closer relationship with John if we weren't in the same competition. It's kind of similar to, I'd say different, but similar kind of to my relationship with Bill Cowher. You know, when I was in Cleveland, before I got to Cleveland, when Bill was at Kansas City with Marty, you know, we spent a lot of time together. We talked, we, you know, visited each other, shared ideas. You know, we were both young coaches, anxious to learn and you know, feed off the other guy and get some ideas and techniques and things like that. And then, you know, it was great. And then you know, I'm the head coach at Cleveland. He's head coach at Pittsburgh. And we play each other twice a year. And you know, I mean, I love Bill, but, you know, when you're playing him twice a year, you're trying to do everything you can to find a way to beat him. And then as you know, that situation changed, and then, you know, ultimately, you know, now with him not having to compete against him in the league, you know, it's a lot easier to have, you know, a relationship that isn't, you know, based on the direct competition that you're in. So different, but, you know, just some similarities there.
Sort of similar to when Saban went to Miami.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You just call him up and be like, what are you doing here?
We're
in the division.
Yeah, two Croatians in the same division. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I mean, Nick, you know, I've had as close a relationship with Nick professionally and personally, you know, through the years, even before when he was at Ohio State, when he was at Navy, when he was at Michigan State, and then obviously, you know, the 4 years in Cleveland and then, you know, in Michigan State again and LSU and then at Miami, you know, that was hard. For both of us, you know, because we had a great personal relationship, but you know, we're trying to win, trying to beat each other, and yeah, I love it that he's at Alabama and he's not in our division and he's not shutting us out like he did the last time we played him down there in Miami. So, but you know, it's so much better that way on a personal level.
Ask you just about when you put together your 46-man game day roster. Like, it seems like you're part of it's a juggle with injuries, and if you get a guy like that's coming back from, let's say, you know, a foot injury, you get a pretty good feel like, all right, he's going to be on this 46-man roster, we can count on him, versus a player who maybe has a concussion that is a little uneasy as to, because it's a little less of a known commodity as to how that's all going to turn out. How does that affect how you put together the 46-man roster in terms of, do you consider you might want another added layer of depth here because I'm not as certain about this situation as I would like a guy coming back from a, you know, physical thing that you have a good feel for?
Right.
You see what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the question. You know, it's just probably a lot longer answer than we have time for, but first of all, there's no discussion until a player is medically cleared. So if a player is not medically cleared, it doesn't, he's out of the game, it doesn't matter. There's no discussion. You know, then there's another part of a player being cleared, but he's not 100%, which, I mean, that's probably true of everybody in the locker room. So that's, but there is a degree of, he can play, you know, he's not injured, you know, nobody's concerned about him being re-injured or, you know, putting himself in jeopardy. It's just the question of how effective he can be. And then at that point, it becomes a coaching decision as to, okay, he can play, just, you know, how effective do you think he'll be? And a big part of that, obviously, is practice. And, you know, we practice, you know, Wednesday is a big day for us, Thursday is a big day for us, and Friday is, you know, more of a mental, you know, review day. It's not as big of a physical day. So by the time you get to Friday, it's not always all that clear, because a player can go out there and perform well on Wednesday, he can perform well on Thursday, but then those 2 days maybe take a toll on the player and whatever situation he's managing, and then on Friday he's not so good, you know, and then there's other situations where guys will go Wednesday and then Thursday and then Friday, and that's easy because you know then, okay, that player is, he's responded to every increased level of activity and come back stronger, so you feel confident that he's ready to go. The player that kind of, you know, goes out there, competes, performs, and then, you know, the result of that is, I don't want to say maybe it's a setback, or maybe it's just a, you know, can he really sustain it at that level, or is it still going to take another week? Then, you know, those are the ones on Friday and Saturday that are really, they're questionable. I mean, that's the bottom line, is they're questionable, is how are they going to respond to, you know, the week of work, and then where do you think they'll be Sunday? And, you know, I know everybody thinks that, like, we, all this is all figured out, but truly it isn't. A lot of it is, you know, I'm waiting to see, just like, you know, the doctors and the trainers are, and, you know, I know you're trying to find that out too, but I'm waiting to see that as well. I don't know until the player goes out there and does it, or even after he does it, then what's the result of that going to be? And so those decisions are made a lot of times when we know, or when we feel pretty confident of what they are, but a lot of times those decisions really go right down to Sunday morning, or sometimes even Saturday afternoon, where you just got to make a call at that point. You know, you just got to decide what, you know, what you're going to do, and this is what we got, and we either got to, you know, go with it or wait till next week. So again, specifically to answer your question, each case is different. Everything is, you know, but until a player's cleared, there's no discussion. There's no decision to make. Once he's cleared, then it becomes a coaching decision as to how effective you think the player can be, or do you think it can be effective for a certain number of plays? Like, okay, this guy can play. We don't think he can play the whole game, but he could definitely go out there and play. So, you know, we need to monitor his snaps. And so it's some combination of all those things.
Real quick here, locker room is open. We'll take a couple more questions here. The locker room is open.
How much input, if at all, does the player himself have?
It depends. It would depend on the player. It would depend on the nature of his situation. So in some cases, a lot. In some cases, I would say minimal. And in some cases, you know, kind of more in the middle. You know. I mean, the players want to play. So not very often is a player going to tell you, you know, I don't want to play. Usually it's more along the lines of, you know, I want to come play, I can do these things. And sometimes they tell you I can't do these other things, or sometimes they do. Sometimes you have to kind of figure that out for yourself. Because, again, a player who wants to play, he won't mention that, well, I don't really feel confident cutting to my left. I can play, I'll be all right. Or, you know, I can whatever it happens to be, because I want to play. And then, again, my job is just to do what I feel like is best for the team, and try to figure out if what he can do is good enough, or if that's going to be, we're going to be able to accept that for the good of the team. Not that he won't give us his best, just what is it?
Coach, can you talk about Joe Flacco just a little bit and the challenges he presents for an opposition?
Plenty. You know, first of all, I mean, Joe's a real smart guy. They put a lot of responsibility for him on play calling at the line of scrimmage. So you don't really see them run very many bad plays. If you have a defense, he can usually recognize what you're in and not run something right into the teeth of the defense. So you have to do a good job disguising whatever it is that you're doing. You know, he's effective on the deep balls. He's effective on the intermediate throws, in cuts, comebacks, seam routes, things like that. And he's good at being patient, taking the checkdowns, and using his backs, you know, Rice, Pierce, Pitta, you know, guys like that. So he's got good field vision. He's got good accuracy. He's obviously got a good arm. He's a good decision maker. And he does a good job of running the team, whether it's at the line of scrimmage, whether it's managing the clock, you know, making end-of-the-game type decisions. things like that. He's, I think, a guy that's obviously very well prepared and is a good decision maker under pressure, and he's shown that multiple times. And I'd say he's tough. He's a tough guy. He's, you know, not, you know, one to back down from challenges or pressure. He'll step up there, throw the ball, take a hit. If he needs a yard, he'll put his shoulder down and try to get it. You know, he's not always looking to slide or run out of bounds, that kind of thing. If it's a situation where he needs it, he's a tough guy. He'll go in there and, you know, and physically, you know, make the play. I don't think that should go unmentioned. I think that's significant to his one of his many qualities, as good qualities as a quarterback.
And knowing him that the way you do with his knee injury, you don't, do you expect that him to that effect to affect?
I think he's a good competitor. I think he'll go out there and do the very best that he can. I wouldn't expect anything less than his best. You know, in this type of game, I mean, I think, look, you can put a lot of players in that category on both teams. There'll be a lot of guys out there that'll be less than 100%, but because of the game, the competitiveness of the game, the competitiveness of the opponents, you know, it's two good football teams, that there's a lot at stake in the game. I think you're going to have a lot of guys out there that are going to give it all they got. It may be less than 100%, but they'll be giving it all they got, because that's really the nature, I think, I would say, of both teams, and that's the way it's been all year from both teams.
Is Salika somebody that's been on your radar, you know, since he was coming out of Utah, or was it, you know, maybe the last couple of years watching his film in the preseason or something like that, you became more interested in him?
We definitely noticed him. And, you know, he was on and off of Seattle's roster from the practice squad. So, you know, if you sign a player off the practice squad, then you have to keep him for 3 weeks. You can do it, but there's a little bit of a commitment there, and then we kind of found a time when he was off the practice squad, and I think they had some injuries, and they were kind of rotating a few guys, and they didn't bring him back, and so we were able to get him on our practice squad so we could get an opportunity to work with him, and he showed up and then improved and then got an opportunity to play and took advantage of that opportunity. So, you know, it was kind of a sequence of things. I'd say different, but like similar to Kyle Arrington, you know, when he came here and went on the practice squad, then went up to the roster and, you know, that type of thing. Dan Connolly, you know, guys like that, sometimes you have an interest in them, but they're just not available. You just can't get them, you know, early. You have to go through a process or, you know, you have, like I said, maybe you have injuries or you're dealing with some kind of roster situation and you want the guy, but you just can't find a spot because you have something else going on and, you know, that type of thing. And you're just not sure enough to commit to him, you know. And if you really have the conviction on any player, obviously you can always find room, you know, if you feel that strongly about it, then you just, you know, make room. But it's guys like the, you know, Silica and Connolly and Arrington and guys like that, you know, you get your eye on, you kind of like, you want to work with them, but sometimes you have to wait till the timing is right, and I would say that was the case with Silva.
Bill, I want to ask this rather just kind of complicated question, and I guess it'd be specific to Ridley, but go for any player. When a player makes mental mistakes, is there a balance that a coach has to go through between making it a teaching moment, not only for him but also for the other 53 or 52 players in the roster, and okay, taking him out of the equation is going to hurt the team? Is there a balance there that you kind of have to go through as a coach where it's like, all right, I want to make sure that I get the message that this isn't acceptable for my team, but I also don't want to hurt the team by taking this player out of the equation or, you know, reducing his workload where it's going to hurt the team?
I'd say absolutely. I think that's the perfect way to put it, actually, that's the balance that you're trying to strike, and that's true probably every day of the football season. Let's put it that way. Every day of the football season, including OTAs, including training camp, that, you know, everybody has to understand that there's a below the line level, and when it's below the line, we can't live with it. I mean, it's just it hurts the team. Now, we're all going to make mistakes, and nobody makes more of them than I do. So, I understand that mistakes are part of the game. I've been in that long enough to know that there's no perfect player. There's no perfect, you know, game or practice, that if you go out there and compete enough against another high level of competition, that they're going to make some plays too. That's part of it. But there's a below the line, and we just can't live with that. So, and expect to win. So that's the bottom line. So, you know, things are going to happen that are below the line that we have to correct, but the things, we got to stay above the line. I mean, it's as simple as that. And that line is drawn at every position with various criteria that apply to those players at those positions. And, I mean, it's not scientific. It's not, you know, there's no textbook on it, on how to handle each situation. Those are decisions you have to make on a daily basis, but, and ultimately on a weekly basis, but, and ultimately on your decision to keep or not keep certain players. Just, you know, things like that come into play. So, you know, it's how each decision gets made. I mean, that's a whole other discussion, but that's a critical part, I think, of coaching in any sport, particularly football, but any sport.
Is it hard? Is it like a huge challenge for a coach to set that line? You know, because I remember Jimmy Johnson saying, you know, well, if Troy Aikman walks into the meeting late, I'm not cutting him. You know.
Yeah. Right.
You know. Like,
right.
Is it a challenge from that standpoint to set that line?
Well, I think, you know, what Jimmy's referring to, and I think, you know, I certainly would agree with that, is that, you know, there's different, you know, levels, and players earn different levels of, you know, status, if you will, on the team. I mean, everybody on the team is, you know, has the same status to a certain degree, but we all know it's not quite the same for everybody. So, you know, that being said, you know, I think that there's a certain, you know, way to deal with different players on the team. But as far as below the line or above the line, I don't think there's really too much doubt about that. I mean, you can't, you know, whatever the position is. I mean, if you're playing defensive back, I mean, you can't have the ball thrown over your head for an 80-yard touchdown. I mean, it's not acceptable. I don't care if the guy's a Hall of Fame player or if he's a rookie free agent in his first practice. I mean, you can't. We can't play like that. You know, we can't throw a pass into a team meeting where there's, you know, four defenders there and try to jam a ball in there and get it picked off when, you know, they got four guys standing there. I mean, it's unacceptable. We can't win doing that. I don't care who the quarterback is. It doesn't make any difference. You know, we can't jump offside and false start and be in first and 15s and first and fives and let them convert third downs on third and fours because we jump offside and stuff. I mean, we can't play like that. So doesn't matter who the player is, it's still below the line, you know, and that's, we can't play like that and expect to win those kind of mistakes. So now, is that going to happen? Like, yeah, it's going to happen. Sure. I mean, I understand that, but if it happens too often, but we can't play like that. And there's going to be a new coach up here too, if that happens too often. Like, well, I know that too. The things that cause you to lose, you've got to eliminate. And before you can win, you can't lose. And when you do plays, or do things as a coach or as a player that cause you to lose, then you're going to be in this job long.
Bill, how does a guy get above that line?
By performing. But yeah, you go out there and perform. You don't drop below the line. I mean, take Ozzie Newsome. I mean, there's a good example right there. And, you know, when Ozzie was a rookie, he played, what, 13 years? I don't know, whatever it was. When he was a rookie, he fumbled, lost the ball, team lost the game. Never fumbled again the rest of his career. Never fumbled again the rest of his career. 600 and 700 passes, whatever, however many passes it was, however many times he touched the ball the rest of his career, never fumbled again. So, what is, you know, why is Ozzie Newsome in the Hall of Fame? That's why. That kind of commitment, that kind of performance, that kind of, you know, it was important enough to him. Fumbled once, didn't fumble again the rest of his entire career. Now think about that. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know how a guy gets in the Hall of Fame. That's, you know, that's one reason. Lawrence Taylor. I mean, how many sacks did he have? How many times was he offside? Go back and look at how many times he was offside. It wasn't very many. know, I mean, there's a guy who hit the quarterback, made as many plays defensively as any player in football, certainly any player I've ever coached, but any player in football, I'll put him up against anybody in terms of big plays, hitting the quarterback, tackles behind the line of scrimmage. I don't care what the stats are. A lot of plays he made that somebody else made, but he was an impact, dynamic, as disruptive a player defensively as there's probably ever been in the National Football League. How many times is he offside? So, you know, that's – was he offside? Yeah. But he was a pretty disruptive player without doing that. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, those are examples of what I'm talking about. For all of us, you know. We've all made mistakes, even the great ones, but they don't repeat them. They don't make very many of them. They correct it. It's important enough to them to move on and get it right. So that's how you do it. You get it right. Okay. All right.